Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to another reality show where we are opening hearts and minds and prison doors and all sorts of things. You know, there's just not enough openings to be happening around here. I am super duper excited about tonight's show. I'm in rare form tonight. I want everybody to know I'm in rare form tonight, and my guest, I think, is going to be the perfect antidote to where I'm at because he's fabulously in rare form himself. I want to make a few quick announcements. First of all, I want to send out a huge, huge gratitude, deeply, deeply felt gratitude to my go-to girl, Trisha Lindner, for building the most amazing website for the pod that we are producing in New York with Al Mean. And www.almeaninnewyork, and you spell out New York, was created solely by Trisha Lindner, and it's an exquisite site. Check it out. You can register from the site. You can go directly to hotel that has discount information from the site. You can contact me or Dawn Leader, who are the two facilitators. Just an amazing job. And if I had a little button, yay, Trisha! You did an amazing, amazing job, my friend, and I am truly grateful for all your help. Ah, and look, she has it up. Good girl. So thank you. Thank you. Check that out, everybody. That's my first note. My second note is I am going to start running. I made a commercial, a promo that I will run every week. And when you make this commercial, you have to I have to say where I got the music from because they didn't charge me for it. So I got the music from Mevio's Music Alley. I am truly grateful for everyone at Mevio's Music Alley. It's basically people that write these songs for pod-free, pod-safe music. It's amazing. I'm really, really proud of the commercial. I'm grateful to Mevio. And Imagine Your Soul produced the commercial with me. And she, the woman Jules, does a show on Sundays at 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, every other Sunday, actually, called The Solstice Hour. And she was incredibly helpful in creating the commercial that you're going to hear tonight. So thank you very much, Jules. Yay! Again, I need that button. Yay! This really is a tremendously, it's a community. We are all kind of putting in our passion and what we're good at, and we all seem to kind of meet in the middle of this, and we're producing amazing things. So I'm truly grateful to all of the people that are helping this pod come into birth. We're birthing a pod. Yay! Okay, now we get to clap on. Okay, yay! Clap off. Okay, tonight we have one of my most fabulous guests because his honesty, his transparency, his humor, everything about this guy, I just soak him up like a sponge because he reminds me of me in that things that happened, things that went south, so to speak, in his life. I know he's going to probably kick my butt for that. Things that went south in his life, he really chose to take what happened and turn it around and you know, come on back up north. Welcome to the show, Chuck Gallagher. Chuck.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the Southern, what you might say, welcome. We're just so happy to be here.
I knew you'd like that. I don't know what's going on with me tonight, Chuck, but I'm feeling that I want people to know it's a serious subject, but I want them to seriously laugh or be able to see that laughter at oneself is the greatest gift in the midst of, you know, truly dramatic, traumatic experiences.
Well, that is true. That is very true.
Yeah.
So it's good to be with you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I hope even, you know, I just hope you keep coming on the show. I'll keep figuring out reasons for you to come on if you keep coming on.
Not a problem. I'll make that a deal.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, we're shaking hands. Yes. Pinky swear. Oh, my God. Okay. Okay, well, I don't know how many of you guys out there have heard my first fabulous interview with Chuck. If you haven't, after this, you should go straight to the archives. He spoke deeply and profoundly about his time in prison and how that changed his life. And what he talked about the first time he was on the show was pretty much everything leading into that and how he became that. So, I mean, if you want, I mean, clearly, I'm sure things will come up again. But what I love is that you spoke about the 23 steps it took you to go from the car to walking into federal prison. And then you wrote a book called Second Chances, and you referenced those 23 steps again. But this time the 23 steps are, like, pretty deep and profound awakenings, is, for lack of a better word, or awarenesses of how that experience took you to a whole new level of success and joy and know thyself place.
It was different. That really is true. And Goldie, it's kind of funny, and I'm not saying the laughter funny part, but it is kind of funny. As I travel around and have the opportunity to share my story, most of the time after I do a presentation, I'll open it up for questions because I can get so caught up in it that I might forget what people really want to hear. And one of the questions that typically comes up is somebody will, you know, stick their hand up and I'll call on them and they say, well, now let me ask you this. If you had it to do all over again, would you do it?
Right.
And for purposes of the folks in the audience, because there probably are some people who are listening who didn't hear the first part of the story,
hey,
so I'm going to give you the quick synopsis.
Excuse me one second.
Sure.
I think we're having an audio problem.
Okay.
I think the people in the chat room are telling me that there's no sound.
There's no sound in the chat room?
They're just telling me there's no sound. I just wrote, can you hear Goldie? And Dream Master said no. So I just want to check to make sure.
Hey, okay, well, in all honesty, that would have to be a Blog Talk Radio thing. I'm in the show. I would recommend that. Why don't you ask them to sign out and sign back on? Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Or suggest to them that they can call in if they want to.
That's what I was just
saying. Oh, wait. Healing Vortex can hear.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Keep going.
Okay. Oh, thanks.
I just wanted you to be aware.
No, we need to be aware of those things. Thank you, Trish.
You're welcome.
Okay. I'm sorry, Chuck.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. The powerful voice of Trish Oz has spoken.
Exactly.
Behind the curtain to let folks know whether they can hear or they can't hear.
Well, right, and we want them to hear. That is definitely a goal of ours.
Well, you know, it kind of doesn't work because there's really nothing to see. So if you can't hear from behind the curtain, we're in deep trouble.
Exactly. I mean, it's lack of visual makes hearing just be upped in a little bit in its importance tonight.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
But what I was gonna say to the folks that are listening is for those that didn't hear the first time, if there has ever been a time that people are familiar with a word, or at least have been bombarded with it in the media, it's the word Ponzi scheme.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, Bernie Madoff just was sentenced to 150 years in prison for creating a Ponzi scheme, which, not proudly I say, was something that I created and defrauded people back in the 80s. And because of that choice, or those choices that I made, there was a consequence, and as you alluded, the consequence was I was sentenced to federal prison. And so when the question comes up, well, if you had it to do all over again, would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
I have this weird feeling, and I'm not even sure how to describe the feeling, but the obvious answer is, well, no, I wouldn't do it. What idiot would choose to do something voluntarily so that they would ruin their lives, lose everything they had, and get sent to federal prison. That is not a natural choice. At least, it's not a natural conscious choice. But, that said, as you alluded, when I stepped out of federal prison, the same sidewalk was there, and it was the same 23 steps walking from the door to the curb. But I will say, although I would not choose to replicate that experience, it wasn't fun, it was probably the most profound educational learning experience of my life.
Well, and okay, so let's pause for a moment. So would you surrender that experience for that learning? Meaning you don't get the learning of that experience without that experience.
Well,
so
that's
would,
true.
So would you surrender that?
Today, no. Now, you know, I would I probably prefer, just as a human being, like anyone, to somehow get the learning from a different resource, a.k.a. listening to Blog Talk Radio, hearing someone talk about it, or reading a book. You know, there are easier ways.
How apropos of you, Chuck.
Federal prison.
No, but listen. I agree, but on the same note, I'd like to note that I want to talk tonight about the prisons that are so clearly, at least from my perception, the prisons that people build that have nothing to do with quote-unquote federal prison,
right,
but are just as containing, just as limiting, just as daunting in their life experiences, even if it's done on 1,000 thread satin sheets.
Yeah, you know, Goldie, that's interesting that you said that, because I'll tell you just a kind of a little side story as we move through the time that we have together. I was the book was written, but I was really challenged with the title. It was like, what should the title be? And my creative mind was going all over the place. And I was in Dallas, Texas at the time, and I was meeting with a fellow who generously gave me some of his time. And we were sitting there talking and carrying this, bantering it back and forth. And I told him, I said, man, I am having such a hard time with the title. Now, his title really, it hung for a while. But his title was 23 Steps, What Prison Are You In?
Oh, indeed.
And I sat back, and he said, you know, Chuck, it was almost identical to what you just said. It's kind of spine-chilling how close it was, because he said, you know, in our lives, we all will face, at some point, our dark night of the soul.
Yes.
And we will, by our choices, create those things that imprison us. He
yes.
said, for example, in our family, he said, when I think it was his granddad, I don't remember the exact relative, but one of the relatives died, and because there was a reasonable-sized estate, the family fell out of love with each other, arguing over money.
Right.
Well, so here they have been imprisoned by an argument. Now, no, they weren't sitting behind bars. They weren't in federal prison. They weren't counted six times a day. No, it wasn't that kind of prison, but it was just as much a prison of deprivation of love
exactly.
as me being in prison, sitting there knowing that I had to get up every day and work for 12 cents an hour.
Mm, 12 cents an hour. Wow. Sorry.
Well, there's a good side to 12 cents an hour, and that is at least you don't have to worry about filing your tax return each year.
That's true. So you didn't have to pay taxes while you were in prison. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what a deal.
What a deal. You know,
I can sense the people listening to this like, oh, boy, I can't wait to do that. Yeah, right.
You know, I'll be honest with you. It's so interesting. I have to interject my father, who often comes up for me. And one of the things my father says all the time to me, he's like, Goldie, you want to pay a lot of taxes.
Oh,
because
yeah.
that means you have a lot of income. You know, don't look not to pay taxes, because if you cut your taxes, more than likely it's going to cut your income. So look to pay lots of taxes. And I honor my father for seeing the other side of what paying taxes is, because he says we shouldn't have free rides. Taxes go to support the country and things we're doing in the country. And he doesn't mind paying a lot of taxes because he has plenty of money to do that which he wants to do for himself.
Sure.
And I honor that. So, yeah, anyways. Okay, so prisons, yes, the prisons that one can be in. Well, you know, you wrote this amazing book. I mean, you have these 23 steps. In all honesty, I would love to go through these steps if you're open
sure.
to that.
Sure, absolutely, not a problem.
Okay, now I have the book in front of me, so I was thinking I would read the step because they're little paragraphs, and then we can discuss them however long or short that we choose to do.
Absolutely, no problem.
Okay. Okay, so step number one, every choice we make in life will have either a negative consequence or a positive result. The outcome we receive is directly connected to the choice we make. As we live our outcomes, the more aware we become of how our choices impact the results we live, the greater power we have to produce the outcomes we desire. Choices made without self-integrity or ethics result in negative results, while choices made with self-integrity result in positive results. My life demonstrates both extremes. Now that's a big paragraph.
Well, it really is true, and it's very simple. The unfortunate thing is, as human beings, we can easily be blinded by the illusions of life and miss the impact of choices until it just comes and bites us. Now, let me give you an easy example. And I like to look at things. This is just me. Number one, let me say to you and to the people that are on the call, I hope I do not come across as judgmental. And if I do, Goldie, you have absolute permission to smack me, okay?
Okay. I've never experienced you as judgmental, though.
Okay. But let's use some current events because it really can illustrate this profoundly.
Okay.
Okay. Governor Sanford in the state of South Carolina, where I live, has caught all manner of media attention because of his purported hike on the Appalachian Trail, which really became a revelation that he went to Argentina to continue or conclude an affair. Now, choices have consequences.
Okay.
And I think it's really interesting because with due respect to this human being, right now, he, his wife, estranged, his children, and those connected with him who trust him the most are all experiencing the consequences of choices that he made.
Okay.
Now, one might assume, in fairness, that if you don't tell the truth, if you lie, that is a choice made out of self-integrity. Okay?
Okay.
One might assume that if you have made a promise of fidelity and you break that promise unbeknownst to your partner, that is a choice made outside of self-integrity. Okay?
Okay.
Now, if those things are true statements, and people in the chat room may have opinions one way or the other, but if those are true statements, if not being forthright and honest, now I could honestly say that, you know, if I have fallen out of love with the person I've made a commitment to, I should be honest and say I have fallen out of love.
Right.
I no longer wish to honor that commitment. That is a choice and a statement made with integrity and truth. But to leave the illusion that everything is fine, but make a different choice, is made out of self-integrity. And what have been the results? Here you have a man who is governor of the state of South Carolina, who has admitted an extramarital affair on potentially, well, clearly more than one occasion, and who is living in this fishbowl with media piranha all around him, nabbing at every piece of flesh they can get. Now, that's a negative consequence from choices that he made.
Okay.
Just like in my case, I made choices to steal money from people who trusted me. Now, I don't know, but I have the sneaking suspicion that most people would agree that if you steal money from someone and they don't know you've done it, it's not like you went to them and said, Goldie, can you loan me $100?
Right.
So if I steal $100 out of your pocketbook, I have made a choice that is out of self-integrity.
Right.
And eventually, and this is the critical thing, and this is where the illusion comes in, eventually there will be a consequence. You may not know what the consequence is. You may not know when the consequence will take place. You may not know what form it will take place.
Right.
But there will be a consequence.
Right. I agree with that.
So,
it's like the universe balancing itself out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because it's not necessarily a consequence. It's just a cause and effect. That's
right.
How I like, meaning a little more neutral in the sense of it's a balance.
Right. And let me just kind of jump on that for just a second, because a lot of people, and I think you just kind of did it, and I think it happens a lot, is people hear the word consequence as if it's negative.
Right.
Consequence is just an outcome.
Okay.
It's just an outcome. So
okay.
I can have negative consequences or positive consequences.
Okay, right. Why is it, though, people don't call it positive consequences?
I know that. They don't. And that,
right.
And for that reason, I said negative consequences or positive results. But,
right.
You know, if you go out and you nurture someone and you love someone and ultimately you're receiving that love reflected back to you, it is a consequence of choices that you make. So
right.
They can go either way, and the powerful thing about that first step is when a person recognizes that the power to create either negative or positive in their life rests with them and the choices they make, then all of a sudden, life becomes dramatically different.
Right. I agree. You know, because, you know, I just want to interject a quick story. That there was a day I was awakened when I was sleeping, and literally, I don't know what it was, but there was something non-physical telling me to wake up and basically be in front of my computer, which ultimately puts me in front of my window, where I watched a person crash into my car at 6:47 in the morning. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this story up is my belief in what you said about consequences, whether they be positive or negative, are so strong, because what happened was I ran out to watch my car be demolished. It was a hit and run. Now, I didn't get the license plate, but I did see the make of car because I really believe it was my soul or whatever it was, woke me up to sit me in front of my computer, which was like bizarre. But what I did was, after I saw the hit and run, I ran outside and, you know, the car had already sped down the street and was gone. I literally applied the law of attraction to the situation and I said, because I want the person caught and because the person ran, I knew the person was afraid of being caught. I mean, that's clear what the message is, right? They hit, they run, they're not owning responsibility. But I knew there had to be fear involved in that. And the fear of them being caught matched the vibration of me knowing they were going to get caught. In other words, if I was afraid they weren't going to get caught, well, now we're on two different planes. Because I'm afraid you're not going to get caught, you're afraid you're not going to get caught, that doesn't put us in the same space. The only way to get me in the same space with the person who hit me was to know. Because you ever hear that saying with the law of attraction, that which you fear, you create anyways?
Right.
Which is truly what I believe what these consequences are. People lie and then they're afraid they're going to get caught. In other words, if you could lie and let it go, you might not get caught.
Right.
But there is a consciousness. I mean, that's part of the evolution of the soul. So the girl, who it just so happened to be a girl, they said 14% of all hit and runs come to conclusion. 2 days after she hit my car, the cop found her car at the end of my street. Hmm. And it happened to be a cop that wasn't even assigned the case. But I believe that that was about me holding a faith that says I knew she'd get caught because I was playing on her fear that she knew she was afraid of being caught.
Right, right.
Does that sound, that you know. So I want people to know how to use this language stuff that we're talking about.
Well, and you made a comment just a second ago that often it is the fear, the thing that you fear, whatever is in your consciousness is in fact what you attract to you. And often you find, and this was true with me, and it may flip up in one of these other steps,
right.
Because honestly, I don't remember each particular step.
I'm sure.
I'm 52. I got gray hair. stuff starts falling out of my head, I'm going to tell you.
Well, if we get to all 23, we do. But if not, because they're even speaking about that in the chat room, going, wow, we have a lot to go yet. So
yeah, we do. So we probably need to go to two. But I will say this. Oftentimes you find that the person who is, I don't know how to put this, most self-righteous, who is most critical, who is most judgmental, is the person that has the most to hide and fears the most of being caught.
Okay.
And it's really... I
agree.
It's fascinating to watch because often you will find that the ones that are, in the media, those are the easy ones to see and to observe.
Absolutely.
But you clearly can observe it. And I've often said when someone is pointing a finger very strongly at someone else, there are three fingers pointing back at them. And you need to be very cautious when those judgments arise, because the question one might ask oneself is, what do I have to hide and what am I trying to keep in the closet?
Right. Well, that's something about, see, that's transparency, which you kind of tap into in your 23 steps. In other words, one of the things that I get, and we'll definitely move on to number two, but one of the things I get is, first of all, we all make mistakes. This is not about anybody pointing a finger at, there you are, you made a mistake. This is really, from my perspective, because we all make mistakes. We have all lied. And you can clearly tell me, no, you've never lied, and that, I believe, is a lie. So once we get it down that we've all lied, I think there is a healing that needs to take place in oneself to recognize that whatever it is that we've done that we are hiding, let's start bringing this out in the open, because in the open we can heal.
Right.
As long as you keep it, secret energy will drain you and deplete you like nobody else's. It's a vampire in and of itself, a secret. It will just kick your butt.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to, because ultimately, like you're, it's about coming into your integrity. Not only can you flip it by owning your choices, you can change your life. And again, like you said, not necessarily having to go to prison to do such.
Right.
Okay, we're going to move on to two, if that's okay.
Go for it.
And also, chat room, if anybody wants to share a story or a comment on the air with us, or if you want Trish to give it to us and have us discuss it, it's all good. You guys are a part of this. So, okay, number two, we are given the creative power to manifest our present and our future, just as we have created our past. It isn't fate that determines our future. We choose our future by the choices we make today. If we don't like the present we are living or desire a more positive future, we can create it. The power is ours. Our ability to break the chains from the past allows us to live in our present and choose to create the future we desire. Now, that is also a big, I mean, these are all big, because this puts all the power back at where it should be, within self.
I was, Goldie, I was sitting down with a young lady that years back, and I say years back, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 7-ish.
Okay.
5 to 7 years ago, she and I met. She came to work for a company that I was associated with, and I actually had trained her.
Okay.
And our paths had parted, and I had gone in my separate way, and she hers. And when I got back to the East Coast, down south here, somehow we reconnected.
Okay.
And it turned out that on Tuesday, she and I had lunch, and we sat there and got to talking, and it became real clear in this conversation that in her life, she desired to have a life different than the life that she was living.
Okay.
Okay. As a young girl, when she graduated high school, her mother said, you know, you go get married, you go do X, you don't go to college, you know,
you
be a secretary, you do. I mean, it was a very limited
secretary,
belief.
Nurse, or teacher.
Yeah, secretary, nurse, or teacher. But if you had to be a nurse, you got to go to college. And she was told, don't go to college. And so it was a very limiting environment for her.
Okay.
And for all of her life up to this point, and I'm going to assume she was in her 40s-ish, but for all of her life, what had taken place was she would take administrative roles that would get her to the top of the administrative pinnacle and hit the ceiling.
Okay.
And it would stop. And it was always that financial struggle that she had. And she was sitting down with me, we were carrying our conversation, and it was like this whole concept of really what I considered self-limiting belief. And as we started talking, I'm not sure exactly what took place, but I really felt like something was just kind of coming in my head and out my mouth. But we talked, and it was like, you have opportunities to do something different. There are reasons why people come into our lives. And we don't have to accept every opportunity that perhaps is put before us universally, but in her case, there were several opportunities that allowed her to pull the ceiling back, like at Wimbledon, look up at the blue sky, and know there was no limit. And it was available to her, and if she continued to hit the ceiling, it was her self-limiting beliefs and choices that put that ceiling there. There was no freaking ceiling.
Right. That's a powerful observation, Chuck.
And what happened was she actually said, I will step out in faith because I truly believe there is no ceiling, and now is the time. It's been put before me enough. I'm starting to get it. And I appreciate the spiritual depth of faith that she has to know that her internal dialogue has been patterned and taught and repeated over and over, but yet here she is in what I'm going to call her midlife, saying, you know what, there really isn't a ceiling. I truly can create the outcome that I want.
Yeah.
What I don't, I mean, this is me, sorry about saying this, but what I don't have tolerance for are the people that want to be victims.
I honor that. But, you know, there is this, like, mass awakening that is happening right now. And whatever's spurning it on or spawning it on, you know, it is the great leap in consciousness to go from victim to creator.
Right.
I mean, that is the quantum leap that, in my opinion, everybody's talking, you know, meaning the people that I follow, all the channelers and spiritual and New Agers. The quantum leap is to know that every single thing that happens is our creation. We create everything.
Right.
I mean, the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful, the neutral, we create it all.
Yep.
But, you know, that is to come into that space. You know, it's like it's much easier to blame somebody for the crap that happens to our lives than to take responsibility. But the thing is, when we take what I tell people, when you take responsibility, you now have the power to create it again, create it anew.
Right.
Take the ceiling and be done with it.
That's absolutely correct. But I've had this said to me before, and I had to think about it a time or two because I'm really kind of not tolerant of victims. But it was told to me, and it is a true statement. By being a victim, by wallowing in, oh my gosh, I'm a victim of X, name it, whatever it was,
whatever it is,
relationship or whatever it happened to be. My father was an alcoholic. Pick it. Doesn't make a difference what it was. I went to prison. Wah, wah, wah.
Right.
The thing about it is, though, victimhood, it feeds you. There is an energy because people, you it's like being, you know, a leech. You get to suck the life out of people
right.
by getting that sympathy factor,
right.
Which to some people, they don't know how to be responsible for their own energy, so they would rather be a victim so that they can suck it out of others.
Well, that's absolutely right. They're not connected yet to a source that is limitless or unlimited.
Right.
So, right, so they're feeding off of others. And as long as you're feeding off of others,
you're feeding in an illusional space.
That's true.
Because there is no other. You're just feeding from an outside picture instead of the within picture, which
right.
is the creator picture.
Right.
Very hot. Okay, I'm going to read something from the chat room. Let's see if you are a victim, you learn and keep those lessons with you and never forget.
That's an interesting statement. If you are a victim, let me just repeat that. You keep those lessons with you. I will agree that profound lessons, things that have a real emotional prick to them that touch our soul, we absolutely will keep.
Right.
We will keep having been in an abusive relationship. We will keep the, in my case, the clear understanding that the ability to lie
steal and go to jail
will send your happy butt to prison, and it ain't fun.
I'm sorry.
I got that. I kiddingly have said to people that, you know, I wish I could just get stuff by being hit by a two before. They didn't have to pick up a freaking oak tree and smack me into another world for me to get it. But I did get it.
Well, and see, listen to your words, because you're like, they. Who's the they?
Right. Who's the they?
Who's the they? It's actually you that needed the oak tree.
And I obviously needed that. And that gets back to then the word being a victim.
Right.
Was I ever a victim? See, I don't know that I was a victim of anything. I don't know that the people, and I'm just this. I know I'm going to create some controversy with this, but the people that I stole from. Well, in society, we will say, all those poor victims.
Yeah.
Were they victims?
No.
Or were they co-creators?
See, that's my philosophy as well. Because see, the minute it becomes the creator, if I'm never a victim to any kind of abuse, lack, anger, whatever, then how could somebody else be a victim of it either? Because I think, in my opinion, what the person wrote in the chat room, that's correct, that you keep those lessons and never forget. The thing that is shifted when you stop being a victim is the feeling around it. Do you feel helpless, or do you feel, wow, did that teach me such a great lesson? I'm so grateful. When you can be grateful for the poop that comes on your plate, then you stop being a victim. But you don't forget the experience. You just make it a gift instead of, you know, a life-sucking blood, you know, experience. Right?
That is true. And when you sit back, one of the hardest things for people to do is to let go of the painful feelings that their choices have created, and recognize I had pain, I experienced it, it taught me something,
yeah,
which empowers me to make a different set of choices.
Yes.
That don't create pain.
Yeah.
I got to talking the other day to a fella. He called me, found me on the internet. I'm easy to find. And he found me on the internet, and he'd been released from prison for, I don't know, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it happened to be. And he was talking about how difficult it was to get a job.
Okay.
And he had been in the brokerage industry and scammed some people, and of course he lost his license. So therefore he couldn't be in the brokerage industry anymore.
Okay.
And he was sitting there complaining about, you know, his plight in life, and how difficult it is and how unfair it is that if you've paid your debt to society, why should society still hold it against you and keep you from being hired? Wah, wah.
I was going to say, see, he's still a victim.
He's still a victim. And,
right.
And you know, I listened to him so he could get it off his chest, because that's an important thing to do, and
okay,
that's valuable. And then whenever he kind of, you know, wound down, it was like, look, dude, you made a choice that put you into the position that you're in at this point, but that does not define who you are. Now, get off your butt and go find things that you are competent and capable of doing that people need to have done, which will create a job and sustenance for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be creative. You know, I look at the people who are very successful, the Madonnas to the Kentucky Fried Chicken recipe guy. Nobody got it on their first try.
Right.
Nobody gets it on. So if you had a negative consequence happen to you on the first try, you're just recreating, just like the successful people might have had, you know, maybe, to be honest, I think they have, I always say, I'm failing my way to the top. I mean, I'm failing my way to success because it's all about try this and, okay, let me tweak that a little. Maybe you have to tweak a little more because, you know, this guy doesn't have his license, so he's got to become a little more creative. But, I mean, clearly if he was good at what he did, which I can see, you were good at what you did, and I don't mean the stealing part. I mean the producing accounts or taking care of people's money, because when you came out, within a year, you were producing a $6 million account. So clearly you were still good at what you did. That doesn't go away. You just got to tweak, you know, how you're doing it.
Well,
or
right. It's channeling the energy into something that becomes productive. And sometimes we can look at the Madonnas and the Kentucky Fried Chicken guys, Colonel Carlin Sanders, and you know, and
well,
and
because I mean, I read that he tried. There was that was not the first recipe.
Oh no, absolutely,
right. He's
tried many times. But
right,
success for folks can come in forms that clearly materially manifest financial success. Success can also come in the very real learning of who we are.
Right.
What our purpose is,
right.
and truly how we impact others. The one thing that I have said over and over and over again that I did learn from being in prison, that success isn't defined by the stuff we have. Now, it's
right.
nice to have a big flat screen TV and to be able to watch, you know, listen in surround sound and drive a comfortable car with GPS that talks to you and all kinds of, you know, live in a lovely house, walk outside to the pool. I mean, I can, you know, you can keep
Well, it doesn't
creating.
Matter. Right, exactly.
It's wonderful, but the reality is when we no longer are in physical form, those that are left behind, at least physically while we have been here, are going to remember us not for the things we had.
Right.
But they will remember us for the impact that we had on their lives.
Yeah. That
and
well
that's where
said.
True success comes. Why don't we shoot to number three?
Shooting. Okay, and what I'm going to do is I'm not going to read the whole things. I'll just get the gist of it.
Okay.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Is what we've created reality at all? Sometimes we believe the illusions are our lives. Wait. Sometimes we believe the illusion in our lives are reality. When we find the courage to look in the mirror, we find that reflection is the person controlling the illusions. God, I like this one. Okay, well, I'll read one more. When we are willing to look past the illusions we've created, we can then find the hidden reality beneath our well-crafted surface. Okay, now that's called letting go of denial. Right?
Yep. And that was and that one's that's very hard. I was a master at creating illusion. Now, in the world that I lived in, I was creating material illusion.
Okay.
The illusion was the car, the house, the clothes, the whole aura, the whole package. If, for lack of a better way of putting it, it was kind of the GQ of accounting. I was creating this illusory person that, man, this is mega success and so forth. And all the while creating this illusion was funding it by stealing money from people.
Okay.
Now, people have asked this question, and it's a fair question. They said, well, you know, did you not, when you were stealing money, just start really feeling bad and, you know, thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get caught and stuff like that? And the answer was no. You know why?
Why?
I bought into the illusion. Man, I was the illusion.
Oh, wow.
I lived the illusion. I became what I was creating. And so, Goldie, I know the difference between right and wrong. I understand lying and theft are wrong. I understand that living in integrity is right. I knew those things. It wasn't like I had this major revelation when I went to prison, what was right and wrong. I knew that before I went in.
Right.
I wasn't dumb.
Right.
But what I did was I got so caught up in the illusion that I fail to recognize the truth of reality. And when that happens to us, regardless of the prison, if we are imprisoned by smoking cigarettes that we can't just quit. Now, let's talk about that just as an example, because, you know, I'm probably going to hit a few buttons here. But let's just say that. Some people would say, well, that's not a prison. Oh, really? Let's see. Have you ever seen the lungs of a person, you know, after their death? Have you ever seen what it physically does to the body that you've been given
right.
to choose to do that?
Right.
You are imprisoning yourself because you are creating a foreign entity coming into your body for the cigarette company's reasons, because, of course, they pump it full of chemicals to addict you to using that. Or what if you have an inclination toward abusing alcohol or drugs?
It doesn't even have to be to the level of abuse. I mean, the illusion is anything you're saying is outside of yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, you could just be gossiping, and that's an illusion.
That's true.
You know, so, which meaning that might not show up as a physical, but then there's an emotional, you know, anytime you're blaming anything, that's an illusion.
Right.
Because you're not taking responsibility for your own creation.
When, in that particular step number three, one of the things that I got while I was sitting in prison was I had to look in the mirror and I had to move past the, oh, I wasn't fairly treated. I had repaid everybody by this point. They got their money back plus interest. Restitution had been made. I was living a clean life before I ultimately was sent to prison. It took a while for me to get there.
Mm.
Federal government moved kind of slow. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened. But, you know, I had to get past the well, it really wasn't fair, and it wasn't this, and it wasn't that, and it wasn't the other, and look in the mirror and say, you know what, you dummy, you chose, obviously, to learn. You chose to do something out of integrity, steal money, do whatever, lie, cheat, name it. You can call it whatever you want, give it whatever label, adjective you want, so that you could get your happy butt to prison to accelerate your learning process, which is exactly what I did.
Well, now, but when you look at it that way, you're not a victim.
No, I'm not a victim.
Not at all.
I made a choice to do something, and I honestly believe, although I'm sure that there are those who would disagree, I believe when I came to this earth, for a series of purposes, and in some cases, I had to learn. I didn't have to learn that way. I may have been able to get the lesson in another more productive way.
Right.
But however I got it may be irrelevant. Getting it and being able to help others get it without having to go to the bottom of the barrel perhaps is part of what my purpose in life is.
Well, indeed. And, you know, what's interesting is, okay, you told me to tell you if you were being judgmental.
Sure.
That was a judgmental statement. And
okay.
The reason why I say that is, if everything is our creation, personally being created by us, it literally makes it that there is no bottom of the barrel. In other words, you just joined other people who went to prison as the creative learning tool. Now,
right.
That might, you know, and the reason why I say it's not bottom of the barrel, because if this is all an illusion, I mean, there are people that live in Gucci and Ferraris that literally go to the deathbed without their soul experiencing the learning that you got in the dirty prison.
Well, and let's go
so,
there.
You know, but right. So where's the value here?
Right. But let's do this, because that really kind of ties into number four. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So let's kind of jump into four with that, because I want to really tie something to that. And let me real quick say, because in number four it says, often it takes hitting rock bottom in order to be forced to recognize the need for change.
There you go.
Hitting rock bottom is like being in complete darkness, experiencing complete aloneness, and having complete awareness that there is no way out if we continue making the choices we made in the past. Now, so you are 100% right in calling me on the judgment, but let me say this. we, as spiritual beings, we have chosen this human existence for some reason, perhaps as a unique and interesting learning environment. Whatever that reason may be that we're here, while here, we do tend to judge let's put it this way, the alcoholic bum who is sleeping on the streets in New York City or in the subways, most of us would say we would probably make the judgment that that person is kind of hit rock bottom.
Okay.
That is not where the average person would want to choose to be.
Right.
So, yeah, we do make that judgment. But, you know, it's interesting because the judgment is really only a human judgment that we apply to the situations that people are in. That person may be a spiritually enlightened being who has chosen to live that illusion for the benefit of someone else who may come along one day and find compassion in their heart and can see past the dirt and the grime and the stench of Mad Dog 2020 and give them some money to help them move to a different place. And it is quite possible that being is much more spiritually enlightened than the person walking by every day, ignoring them, making the judgment, you know, look at that bum, you'd think they'd go get a job.
Well, and once you recognize that that is at the very least a potential, you know, the whole system of hierarchy gets flipped on its ass.
Oh, yeah.
Because the truth of the matter is, who's teaching, who's learning, who's experiencing what? I mean, all of a sudden, you know, it's like the Rolling Stones, the sinner and the saint. You know, and how do I know this? I grew up very much in the dark side. I mean, I was a criminal for a good portion of my life. I didn't get caught, but that doesn't mean I didn't have my learning experience. You don't have to get caught to learn.
Right.
You just have to experience compassion. You have to experience. For me, it's all about what brings you to the virtues of life, which are, you know, the respect, the trust, the compassion, the creator. Everything that's ever happened to me in my life, I've taken responsibility for. Everything. And I'm talking from back when I was 3 years old and my good old cousins were jumping up and down on me in ways they shouldn't have been jumping up and down on. I mean, I've taken responsibility for all of it because my goal is not to play. I played the pity party. I can remember literally in my 20s, I had an aha moment that I attracted men when they were in my life. The way I got attention from them was by getting hurt. And I can remember literally going, it was just a light bulb turned on. I went, if I continue on the path throughout my life to get love by being hurt, I'm so good at what I do, I'm going to be paralyzed in a bed. And what happens when the love doesn't come? You know, like, I am up the creek without a paddle based on this way of getting what we're saying, getting energy from people,
right,
getting attention. And it was literally, it just became a light bulb, and I was like, okay, so we got to change that fast. We want to attract people in your life because of your strength, not because you're getting hurt.
Right.
And it didn't happen overnight. The aha came overnight. But every time I started plugging that belief system into my relationships, I started noticing it going, stop, Goldie, knock it off. Knock it off because the visual of me paralyzed in that bed was there. And I knew I was going to do it. And it was like, stop. And I did stop.
Right. Well, one of the things that I've found, and I've seen this, and it doesn't have to happen to everybody. It's just like you said, sometimes we get our aha moments in different ways, and not necessarily by, quote, being at the bottom of the barrel, but I make the comment here, I said, to hit rock bottom is truly a gift. And for some of
it is. No, and it is. And listen, I was a crackhead at 22. That's pretty much rock bottom. I just didn't, no one pulled me out. I pulled myself out. But
right.
The truth is, I was pathetic.
Right. Well, and you know, when you do, it's like when you have the gift of that, in the midst of the darkness, when it can't get any worse, sometimes, not for everyone by any stretch, but for some of us, that is the only way we can learn to accept responsibility for where we are.
Absolutely.
And once you get that, that's the key. Once you can accept responsibility, I am. And wherever it is I am, I created I am.
Mm-hmm.
And when I figure that out, I am responsible, then I can make different choices and create something totally and entirely different. And if I choose to improve by judgment my life, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. By choice. Because I felt the need to say that because we were talking all about the criminal activity and being caught. You know, I never got caught.
Right.
So does that mean I didn't learn my lesson?
No, it doesn't. And a lot of people assume that being caught, that the consequences from your choices have to be linear and directly connected.
That's,
I'm going to give you a quick little example.
Okay.
There was a gentleman and a lady that worked in a facility that I was ultimately a supervisor for at one point. And this lady worked in an administrative role in the facility, and the guy worked in sales. And it was a very small facility, and she kind of took a liking to this older fella, and he was all caught up in the fact that there was someone who was 15 years his junior that found him attractive and appealing.
Okay.
And so one day, he tries to steal a kiss.
Okay.
Well, now, okay, it's corporate America. You can't do that, all
right?
So, of course, what does she do? She files a complaint, which creates an investigation, which ultimately means, dude, that's sexual harassment. You can't do that stuff. So we had to transfer him, and he was so distraught by it, he quit in anger and felt like he had been led on, and when the time came to respond, then all of a sudden he was just smacked down.
Hmm.
And he carried this anger. And he felt like, you know, he was done wrong and she should be fired, but he was hanging on to what he thought the consequence should be.
Right.
And the anger just, it really ate at him like a cancer.
Right.
Come to find out 18 months later, she's investigated because all the while she has been stealing from the company. And so she is taken out in handcuffs.
So, well, that's like what you said earlier about people that are critical, and she was hiding her own stuff by bringing all this attention to him.
Right. And it came out. I had told the guy, his name was Grady. I said, Grady, every choice has a consequence. Let go of what you think the outcome and consequence should be.
Yeah.
Because her choices will carry a consequence. But let go of your outcome.
Roll in it.
Let the outcome be.
Yes, yes. Chuck, all right, we have a caller that wants to speak, and we're going to get to you. What I'm going to do is I have a 1 minute and 13 second promo I want to play, and then we're going to come back from the promo break and take the caller's question, okay?
Cool.
Or comment. Okay, so let's play this.
Almeen's classes have no curriculum or specific format. There are no predictable topics. The reason is that this remarkable mystic provides an unparalleled transfiguring experience, most certainly not to be encountered anywhere else on Earth. Almeen has been given the most sacred task of assisting the infinite to usher in Earth's ascension. Everyone in these classes share in executing assignments from the infinite. Information beyond students' wildest dreams pours in, and those who enter the classes as students leave as masters who have silenced the dialogue of their minds. To learn more about this amazing mystic and teacher, visit www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almeen will be presenting for the first time in New York on Friday, September 11th, through Sunday, September 13, 2009. For more information on how to register for this profound class and for hotel accommodation, go to www.almeninnewyork.com. That's almeninnewyork.com.
Yay! I do like that. Okay.
Wonderful commercial, by the way.
Thank you. It's not an easy thing. Promoting someone is dramatically enlightened as herself. Okay, area code 571, you're on the air.
Hi, Goldie.
Hi.
It's Allison.
Hey, Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Chuck, Allison, Allison, Chuck.
Hi, Allison, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Chuck. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Good. I guess I have a little comment with what you were both talking about 5 minutes back or so.
Okay.
That's why I beeped in. When you were talking about people, going through dark parts of their lives and judgments and things like that, it made me think of the time, Colby, where you and I went into New York City together, and we took the subway in.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a little plan set up.
Yeah.
With one of your mom's coats, a fur coat that was not in super great condition, but it still had a lot of use to it. And we brought that in, and it was a cold morning, and we found a woman. Well, it took us a little while to find someone, but we did, who could use that coat, and that was a homeless woman.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Of course.
And
of course.
Yeah, it was a really great experience when we did that. And
by the way, I want everybody to know that was Allison's idea. I didn't know what I wanted to do with the coat. It had gone through a house fire. It was smoky. It wasn't burnt, but it smelled like soot. And I'm really not a fur wearer. That's just not my gig. And I was like, what do you do with a smoky soot filled coat? And she was like, we're going into the city. Why don't we give it to a homeless person? And I went, well, golly gee, that's the best idea I've heard all day. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was really enlightening and really, I don't know if I can even come up with words, because it's hard. Sometimes hard for me to put, my feelings into words. But what I was wondering and wanted to talk to you both about was. I remember when we were doing that and we spotted this woman, I don't remember her name or anything, I just remember that, the feeling I had was, there are, people that walk by homeless people all the time in New York or any other city for that matter, and they'll pass a judgment on that person. Some do, some don't. And passing that judgment or creating that thought kind of puts you into a little bit of a tunnel of putting that person, labeling them. And you and I didn't do that with this woman. We just kind of opened up our minds and our hearts and said, we're going to find someone who could use something like this and share it with them. And
yeah,
remember how...
We were looking for her, for God. I mean, literally, we came in looking for somebody, the more distraught, the better.
And what was so fun was the look on her face when she received the gift of the coat. I mean, it was like her whole day she started beaming and shining, and she was so happy, and she knew she had a warm coat, and she thanked us like a bajillion times, and it was in front of my two children, and I was so glad that they could experience that with us.
Yeah.
And it was just an experience that I wish I could repeat. On a more regular basis of sharing and doing something like that. You know what I mean?
Well, Chuck, why don't you address how we can give back? I mean, clearly that's part of who you are now.
Well, I sat here and I have listened to that story and I'm touched. It is quite beautiful. And there was... it's unfortunate because we sit back sometimes and say, well, how can we do that today? And that can be done in the littlest ways. That was a very overt thing that you did.
Right.
And it left, but think about the impression that it left. She, the recipient, unexpectedly received something that was just a gift from the universe.
Absolutely.
Had no intention, no knowledge when this homeless person got up that day that someone was going to give them a fur coat.
Okay, wait a minute, though. I got to interrupt. How do we know that if we're the creator? She co-created that with us.
Well, yeah, that's true, but not consciously.
How do
In other
we know
words,
that?
Well, but think about it. I'm talking about from a human perspective. In a spiritual perspective, we can sit back and say that there's an easy thing for us to do, and we have to be careful of, is not to take everything into the spiritual and then have no responsibility for what we choose to do in an earthly environment.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. We got to be grounded in the body in order to reach for the stars.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
so,
that
you
is
know,
true.
This lady didn't get up that day saying, you know, somebody's going to be bringing me a fur coat, baby.
Just don't know what she, maybe she intended that this was going to be a grand day in her life. Who knows?
It could be. That's very true.
Maybe not a fur coat specifically, but a grand day.
Right. And in fact, let me kind of deviate from, but there's a point to this, because you all both did something that was impactful for you, for both of you, and it was impactful for this lady. But I'm riding down the road one day, not long ago, in Dallas, Texas, where I used to live 8-10 months ago, and I'm listening to the radio, and they had the, quote, Citizen of the Week on the local radio station. And it was this seventh grade kid, okay?
Oh, wow.
And the kid was on there because a fellow student was sitting one day having lunch, eating the little Tangelo pieces or orange pieces or whatever it happened to be, and got choked, okay? So here's a seventh-grade kid who was choking. Now, you all know if you've ever choked, and we all have probably at some point, not to death, but gotten choked, that you can't say, I'm choked, come over here and help me.
Right.
If you could do that, you could breathe, you wouldn't have a problem, but you can't breathe.
Right.
So
you're usually doing hand motions.
Yeah, you're like,
pointing to your throat.
Right.
You're usually turning blue and all that good stuff.
Blue, nasty sounds coming from your mouth, grabbing your neck, you know. And the kids were seeing this, and they kind of all jumped around like, watch this kid die, which, duh.
Right.
Well, this one kid comes over, the one that was, quote, Citizen of the Week, but he comes over, gives the kid the Heimlich maneuver, orange slice, flies out, boom, done. Okay? Saved the kid's life.
Okay.
Now, he's being interviewed. His mother is there, and she's like, oh, I'm so proud of my son. You know, you can hear the mother beaming and so forth. And the radio announcer says to this kid, says, well, how did you know to do the Heimlich maneuver? Did they teach you that in health class? And the kid's like, no, I learned it on the movies.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, you learned it from the movies? He said, yeah, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, wow.
Okay, now, the point to that whole thing is, just like with what you guys did, here is this kid. He did not wake up that morning consciously and say, I'm going to save somebody's life today. The seventh grade kid, one got up and didn't get up and say, you know, I can't wait to lunch. I'm going to choke. Now, spiritually, he may have absolutely made those choices, but on a conscious, physical, human level, one kid got up in the morning, the other kid got up in the morning, probably both of them played Xbox the night before or PlayStation 2 or 3. You know, they were hard to get up. The parents trying to kick him out of the house. They put on the sloppy clothes. They go to school. One of them gets choked. The other one saves his life. And they didn't sit back and say, you know, I'm going to save somebody's life today.
Right.
But they made an impact that was profound and wouldn't be forgotten.
Right.
And the question comes down to, can we do that every day? And it may not be the magnitude of saving a life or giving a coat, but what about the circumstance when you go through the drive-thru and the person is sitting there?
Hello?
Am I there?
Oh, okay. You're still here.
Okay. But what about when you drive? You know, go through the drive-thru and you're sitting there and the person is there and, you know, you're having a bad morning. Do you know the impact that the simple things have of talking to someone, of complimenting them, of saying something kind, of being appreciative? It's that whole thing of, it's the simple things that can truly impact a life that they may never forget. I got to do this, Goldie. You know,
hey,
you're the host.
Whatever you got to do, Chuck, I support.
Okay. But I will say to the group here, The night, I will never forget this. Let me rephrase that. The day that my Ponzi scheme, the day the card was pulled from this deck of cards, this house of cards that I created, and the whole scheme collapsed.
Okay.
I remember that night talking to a man in Boise, Idaho. I don't know who he was. He does not know who I am. It was a chance call, if you can say that anything is chance. But on a human level, it was a chance call to a man who was leaving to go meet his wife for dinner. And I said, I'm considering suicide. And he stopped and took the time to talk with me. And he made a statement. I have no idea how long we talked. Don't remember anything we talked about except one statement, which I think I said the last time. But
okay,
the statement was, son, you have made a big mistake. But you are not a mistake. And then he proceeded to say, the choices you make now will define your life forever and establish a foundation for your children. Make those choices wisely. So just like you and your friend went to the city and intentionally gave a coat and impacted a person's life, we can impact lives every day either profoundly or simply by the choices that we make.
Well, and I believe there's a famous story by Rumi or one of the famous poets or mystics, you know, Confucius, or maybe not somebody that famous. I just know there's a famous story about a guy walking down the street getting ready to commit suicide. He's on his way to go to the bridge, and he goes, if nobody smiles at me, I'm going to jump off the bridge. And somebody passing by him smiles at him. And it's like it just put a feeling inside him of hope that, you know, the world was not this terrible place, that somebody smiled and had some joy and chose not to kill themselves. I mean, we really don't know how simple things will impact people. We can only come from the space that we choose to be, you know, a powerful being on planet Earth.
Right.
Because,
and, you know,
that's their creator experience.
The thing, and the cool part, to my knowledge, unless there's the rest of the story, the cool thing is you and your friend don't have any knowledge of what impact the receipt of that coat had on that lady.
Well, and Allison,
we don't, because I mean we walked away.
Well,
I
did say that, you know, what if the woman died because all of a sudden there's a fur coat on the scene and some other homeless person stabs her to death to get it? I mean, we might have ended her life actually.
Or what if the receipt of that coat was something that was divine to her that said you do have hope in this life? And as simple as it may be, it gave her that feeling of empowerment and just the good feeling about herself.
Indeed.
And what if she has changed her life and has become an author and is someone that you don't recognize today?
Well,
maybe she's on Blog Talk Radio.
Maybe she is.
Well, the truth is we don't know. There were some physical attributes to her experience that would make me believe that she is still in a limited place. When I put the coat on, her arm, it took me like 15 minutes to straighten her arm out to put the sleeve on her.
Mm-hmm.
She was in a wheelchair. She definitely was not so coherent. She acknowledged us giving the coat, but there was definitely a glaze over her face.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do it. I did it because I thought it was a phenomenal idea. It was certainly better than just dropping the coat in a Goodwill bin.
Something.
Exactly. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to experience potentially
the gift of giving.
Well, and that's literally a lottery. I mean, it was like this woman, in my eyes, won the lottery that day. She got it was a mink coat. She was a homeless person that got a mink coat. I really did think that was hot. But I, like I said, I sat and pondered and said, that might have been a negative potential. That might have been a positive potential. The truth is, I don't know. the moment we did it, I mean, like Allison said, her kids were there, so they clearly got to see, you know, a charitable act. I got to experience it. It was, I mean, from a selfish point of view, I definitely was feeling like, hey, rock and roll. I mean, my mom, you know, she was a pretty charitable woman. We, her legacy kind of, you know, went in, you know, the energy behind it went with that, and it was powerful, and it was, you know, I always say, if something like that can happen to her, why can't, with us, something, a charitable act come out of nowhere?
You know, Goldie, I was just thinking of something.
Okay.
There's things that, like, happen to us that sometimes we don't recognize as opportunities in our life. You know what I'm saying, Chuck?
Oh, yeah, Chuck has a, he has something about that.
Yeah. And it's when let's say you're sucked into victim mode or drama or whatever, or pity parties or any of that kind of thing going on, things can come at you, or someone can, you know, do something or say something, and there are times that we just don't receive them. You know what I'm saying? And then there's times when we are open to receiving them.
And
you know what I mean?
And sometimes we expect the receipt to be in a form we're looking for, when in reality the gift is something that comes from an unexpected place or in an unexpected way.
Yeah.
That lady, that day, I would venture to say, it's a guess, I wasn't there, wasn't expecting someone to come up and give her a freaking mink coat.
Full length, I might add.
You know, so,
right.
So does that mean that when we say, you know, why can't, the why question, Goldie, that you kind of have, well, you know, why can't something like that happen to me? Well, it can, but it may not happen in a manner you're expecting. You know, why that might be, I'm going to try to equate it. You know, why doesn't somebody come and give me a Mercedes?
Okay, well, wait a minute, though. I got a question, and I'm going to put this out to the chat room as well. Who can write into the chat room or call up and express it? Now, I know that I have had recently money come from, and I'm just using money because it's something that, you know, it was beneficial to me. I could definitely say that the experience that came from the car, when I told you the car got totaled, that was clearly an experience out of nowhere that not just, you know, ironically, the money that ended up being overlapped, meaning the car that gets totaled, we go to court, I make money from that, I buy a new car. The money that's left over from that actually bought my radio equipment for my first radio show. And it literally, the check came in like a week before the contract was signed for me to go on the radio. So, you know, it's like if you look at the sequence of events, my car got totaled so I could get on the air. But then let's go even further back. My soul woke me up from a deep sleep to look out the window, to be on the computer, to look out the window, to watch the car get hit, to then put in this whole thing, list of events that ultimately, beyond the money and everything else, was such a conviction to my beliefs that she got caught 2 days after it happened, because I immediately went into the philosophy of the law of attraction. If you're afraid, and I know you're going to get caught, we're going to meet. At some point we're going to meet, because that is a vibrational match. And 2 or 3 days later, I'm not sure if it was 2 or 3 days, it was one of those, it happens. I mean, these are things that happen, you know, initially they look like, okay, that's not good. I mean, when I initially saw the car get hit, it's like, that kind of sucks. But when things unfold, similar to when you take your first 23 steps into jail, that sucks. But the 23 steps you take out of it, you cannot not say that, okay, this is such a tremendous experience. It's got to be looked at more than just the part that sucked, because it confirmed beliefs of your beingness, not Chuck Gallagher the human, but Chuck Gallagher, eternal being on a soul journey.
That's true. And I often say, related to the experience itself, that not only was it one of the best experiences of my life, but it helped me find out once the illusory trappings were removed, house, car, home, marriage, license, career, etc., when they were removed, that basically it was like, and I'm not trying to be funny with saying this, but it's like being stripped naked, you know.
It is.
What's there is what there. You got to deal with it. That's what you
yeah.
got. That's your
yeah.
God-given who you are. And it gave me the opportunity to find out what does it mean to be a Chuck Gallagher.
Yes. Yes, from an eternal point of view. In other words, the temporary stuff. There's a saying that one of my teachers, who's a channeled entity, goes, the nemesis? Is that the right way to say that?
Yeah, nemesis. Mm-hmm.
The nemesis of the soul is the mind. So it's like the mind will tell you stuff is important. The soul will tell you the lesson or the depth of experience is important.
Right.
Okay, people are knocking on my door. I'm in a radio show, Dad. Bye. Everybody say bye to my father. He's going.
See you, Dad. Good to meet you over the air there, buddy.
Okay.
Let's chat sometime.
You'd like my dad. He's a very cool man.
Yeah, I'm sure would.
He would. Okay, so in other words, there's so many aspects. What I'm truly, truly learning in this particular lifetime, I don't necessarily have memories of past lifetimes, but I can sense that I was alive in many different times because I've had deja vus, you know, going down roads I've never been on before, and it's like, okay, I just get a sense I've been there before.
Sure.
Anyways, there is a sense to me that, and what I want people to know is that there's a part that's, there's aspects. There's an aspect of Goldie that's physical. There's an aspect of me that is non-physical, that is soul, and I'm learning that the human part is like 1%. The non-human part, and that it's not that, because I'm on other dimensions, I'm in other galaxies, I'm in other forms, I'm in other timelines, I'm in other universes. Now, if we start aligning to this way of thinking / being, we're going to open up all sorts of miraculous things coming out of the sky at us, like a fur coat coming to a homeless person. That is so possible. And again, like, not from the sense that we have to hit our rock bottom for something like that to happen, but the sense that we have to let ourselves go from the prisons that say we're just physical. That in and of itself is a prison. We are so much more than our physical bodies. We're eternally experiencing many things, and if we allow ourselves to expand to that, we will experience things just seemingly coming out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody, and Dream Master, I wish you would call in. He's got so many wonderful things that he's writing in the chat room. You should call in and share a story with us. He's a very conscious person, I can tell. And call in and become part of the show. I mean, I know you're part of the show by being in the chat room, but let's hear you, my friend.
Hey, Goldie.
Yes, love.
I want to, while we have some time.
Okay.
I want to hit number 5 for a minute, okay?
Okay, okay. And what we're going to probably end up doing is you're going to come back and I don't want to rush through these.
I understand.
So we'll just do another Chuck Gallagher show. Wherever we stop, we'll pick up the next time.
We can do that. Not a problem.
Okay, now do you want to read it? Because you read
very well.
It doesn't
make any difference. Go for it. Whatever you prefer.
I prefer you to, because
okay.
You read very well.
All right. When we live in illusions, we often stand in judgment of other people's choices. And when we judge other people, we maintain our illusion of personal goodness. Illusions created by judgments keep us from observing life and cause us to miss our own life lessons. So when we release those judgments, we come closer to seeing the truth and are free to evolve positively in our journey. Now, let me give you a personal story to kind of illustrate that. In the community I lived in, I'm going back into the 80s, when I was committing my crime of lying and theft.
Okay.
But whilst in the midst of doing that, which was hidden under the cloud of all of the success and material crap that I had surrounded myself with, and people were like in so awe of how purportedly smart I was, there was a doctor in town. He lived in the neighborhood where we lived. He had a daughter who was, I don't know, I'm going to say 5 or 6 years old, and a little neighborhood girl had come over to spend the night with his daughter. Now, I can't tell you the whys. I'm not going to make a judgment about it, but for whatever reason, the doctor came into the room where these two little girls slept and purportedly was preparing to molest the little neighborhood girl who had come over to spend the night. Okay?
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, that would cause us to repel. My gosh, it's terrible. He's a doctor. He should know better, and all that kind of stuff. Well, it created a huge uproar in the community. Now, as you can imagine, nobody would condone sexually molesting a child.
Obviously.
Well, sexually molesting anybody, but certainly
right.
a child who may not be able to defend him or herself. So it came out. It came out fairly quickly. It created this enormous uproar. It created all sorts of consequences and swirls that took place, and ultimately the doctor lost his practice and certainly had to leave town kind of on a rail type
right.
thing. Well, here's where the story gets kind of interesting. He had left town, and everything had kind of calmed down, and then a lady in the neighborhood had found out that he was going before the medical licensing board, and they were going to evaluate whether it would be appropriate for him to keep his license as a physician. Now, there were people, numerous people, hundreds of people, who talked about the quality of medicine that he practiced and how he helped save their life.
Okay.
So there was just a whole host of people who were there to speak on his behalf. But this lady in the community, she was just incensed over the fact that he could potentially raise his hand or anything else at this little child, and he should not have a license to practice. And so she started making telephone calls, and she comes to me. And she says, "We need someone to write a letter." Well, damn, I can write. And so I crafted a very profound letter that I sent on behalf of the members of the community to that medical board. I was Mr. Righteous Judgmental himself. And I said in that letter, if I had done anything like this, not only would I lose my license, but I would be thrown under the jail. There is no way, if you're, you know, whatever, that you would give this man his license. And, I mean, it was really profound. It was quite
profound. But wait a minute. So you basically, without knowing which way or not, wrote the letter that he had done it, based on, meaning the...
Well, everybody, you know, it was
kind of
like...
The slam was that he did it.
The fact was he did it. That wasn't a question. Nobody questioned the fact of his attempt. Let's put it that way. He didn't have sex with the child or anything, but the attempt was sufficient, and that was clearly known and acknowledged.
Oh, okay.
But I was Mr. Judgmental. I was the one who was writing that letter, let's put the death nail in this guy, he shouldn't keep his license and so forth. And
I see, okay.
And he lost it. He lost his license permanently from the practice of medicine. And people, you know, congratulated me on the eloquence of my waxing a poetic and helping him to lose his license. And I'm sitting there, and we're sitting here talking about it. Let me just read this. When we judge other people, we maintain our illusion of personal goodness, and illusions created by judgments keep us from observing life and cause us to miss our own life lessons.
Mm.
Now, couldn't I, in retrospect, couldn't I have said, damn, that probably wasn't a real smart thing to do, Doc. It is not my job to judge you. Perhaps I need to look in the mirror, in my own closet, where no one knows what old Chuck has been doing, and perhaps I need to make amends, pay these people back, be honest, and change my life so that I don't have the furor in the outcome that this man has experienced
right.
because of his choices. But I pointed the finger, and I firmly believe that the karmic response to that was
the finger
sure
got pointed
enough,
at you.
I got the finger pointed at me, and I permanently lost my license, and while he got probation, my butt was in the slammer.
Well, and, you know, there's a reason why the Buddhists practice harmlessness. Chuck, we have a caller, so I'm going to take the call.
Cool.
Okay. Okay, 905, you're on the air.
Am I 905?
You are 905.
Hello, 905.
What's your name?
Dennis. Dream Master.
Dream Master, yes, okay.
Hi, Dream Master.
How you doing, Chuck?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good. Congratulations on your book and your outcome.
Well, thank you.
Well, I don't know if I got a story to tell or whatnot, but maybe a question I can answer, but, you know, I got tons of stories.
Whichever. Where do you feel like taking this? It's a family show.
Yeah, it's a family show. Okay, there we have it.
Dennis, you have no idea. I am in just such, I'm in a mood today. So God bless you. Called in on the day Goldie's in a mood.
All right, Goldie.
It's all good.
Yeah, it's always all good.
Yeah.
Should always be anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. Just like to be part of the chat. And.
Well, okay, wait a minute. But I've seen your chat. Okay, do you have a story where something came out of nowhere or... You know, you had some sort of experience where, you know, I guess kind of the theme of the night is basically, you know, I saw that, you know, I think what I want people to know is if you grew up a little bit, you know, on the quote-unquote other side of the tracks, whatever that is, you know, whether it be in secret or not in secret, and you turned out to be an okay person, you know, can you give an example of where, you know, there was a point in time where your life was kind of running straight to the brick wall, however you woke up, whether by the authorities or the authority within your own being, that didn't happen to you, and you are an okay person right now, or something to that effect?
Well, we all try to be. Yeah, you know, you'll sit down and... you know, once the shit hits fan and you'll think about what has happened and what you've done and how stupid I was to do such a thing. And then it comes a time where that, you know, you got to, like we were discussing earlier, that you got to take responsibility for your own actions and realize that your actions are based on your decisions. And, you know, there's nobody to blame other than yourself. And you go from there, and, you know, it's depending on whether or not you want to be a better person or not. And, you know, the decisions that you make there on out, you should feel as though that, you know that you are taking control of your life and your future. And you go from there, really.
Yeah, well, because it's almost a humorous experience to say I blame myself. Blame immediately constitutes no responsibility. But if you're blaming yourself, you know, boy, there's a lot of characters in there that haven't unified. You can't blame yourself. You can simply look at your choices and say, you know, like, okay, this and this equates to this. Now, yeah. I can either continue to do A, B to get C, or I can change it up and do A, A, B, B, and then maybe get F. I mean, you know, this whole blame and guilt, boy, if they're not ever useless emotions, I think jealousy is up there too. Blame, guilt, shame, jealousy, these are all such useless emotions once you take the journey within. Because once you take the journey within, you see how the only thing that matters is observation, not judgment. Just, let me watch this and see what equals to that. Okay, and if I want a different outcome, well, I'm going to tweak the equation. I mean, it literally becomes science.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know?
I know, Goldie, but you know...
Damn it! I'm passionate about
it! Hey, listen, you know, blame is always a word that's going to be thrown out there, and you know, there's too many people that blame other people for what happens to themselves, and if you can't blame yourselves, who are you going to blame? Other people? You can't do that. It's not fair to the other people.
It's not fair to blame self. There is no blame. Blame is just a way of saying I choose not to see, not to learn, not to experience. Wait,
right.
Chuck, what do you think about this?
Well, I try not to. Well, in fact, I don't want to say I don't. Well, I'll back off of that one real quick.
Okay.
I try not to focus on the concept of blame. It's like, this is really a strange thing. It's really kind of funny the way this whole conversation evolves, because it's like with the very next one that we would be talking about. I say, we are spiritual beings living in a physical world. Okay, we can agree with that. But often the truth of our existence, of who we are spiritually, is hidden by living in that day-to-day humanness. And the day-to-day humanness is the thing that says, I want to blame, and there's guilt, and there's judgment, and that's the humanness part of it. There are no mistakes.
Right.
There are only opportunities that we have to learn and grow. So when you sit back and you accept that if something happened today that perhaps was less than pleasant, we did something stupid. You lied, you got caught. I'm just making it simple for me because
right.
I don't have the greatest examples sometimes in all the world. But whatever had happened today, if there was something that was less than pleasant, all it is giving us an opportunity somehow to learn and grow.
Right.
And when you do that, when you have a chance to figure out, I really do have the power, I really am empowered to change my life, then it simply means make a different choice.
Well,
now,
right, because you won't keep sticking your hand in the fire if you know you have the power to pull your hand out.
Right.
That's why I think it's such a quantum leap in belief and consciousness to know that there is nothing outside of us. It is all us.
Sure it is.
Because it immediately has to wake us up to, that means everything I'm doing, the relationships I'm in that are painful, I don't have to be there. It's like, no. No, you can find your love from within that which you're trying to find outside in the illusion, which is showing up as a really bad flavor in your mouth anyways.
Yeah, but the decisions that you make throughout the day you are ultimately directly responsible for.
Yes, throughout every moment of your being.
Right. Well, most people would say that if you were a decision that was not such a prudent one, they would blame you for it. You know?
Well, see, that's when you get into, listen, I'm here to try. I want to stick my hand in the fire. In other words, we have to stop making mistakes be this judgmental thing that we're, as what the beautiful man said to Chuck on the phone, we are not our mistakes. We are just experiencing, exploring, creating. You know, when we were kids, it took us a long time to figure out how to speak, quote unquote, in full sentences. We made tons of mistakes. We didn't just get up and run the 25 mile dash, whatever,
we
made mistakes.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
And as a kid, we looked and go, oh, look how cute. She keeps falling down, but she keeps trying. And as an adult, we go, look at the loser. He keeps screwing up. And it's like, whoa, I'm the same being, just learning something new.
I know. Say that to myself, big dummy Dennis.
Sometimes. Oh, stop.
I don't know, but we already know. You know when you're doing it that maybe you shouldn't be doing what you're doing, but you do it anyway just because.
Well, because you want to experience it.
Yeah, but, you know.
But, to this point, one of the most empowering things that can happen is when you achieve a level of, what's the word I'm searching? Consciousness.
Clarity? Okay.
Clarity or consciousness.
Yep.
But when you achieve a level of consciousness. Now, let's just take the kid in the fire and, you stick your hand on the stove, you burn, you pull yourself back. Okay? There is a point at which when you get it that, and let's assume you can talk by this point, when, little brother or little sister comes up, you say to them, don't put your hand on the stove, it's hot, you'll burn yourself.
Okay.
Then what happens when you recognize it, when you can speak it, and when you can acknowledge it as reality, then you can change your behavior.
Right.
Okay? So let me go back to...
five?
I'm kind of going... Well, I don't know what number it is.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Just talk.
You know, six or seven, I guess, at this point. I'm kind of floating out there. So
okay. It's your book. You're allowed to do that.
Yeah, well, thank you. But... One of the things I say, in fact, it is in number seven. I'm just scanning it real quickly. I said, by being open about who I am and the choices I have made, I found that my conviction, I'm talking about prison, is
okay.
not an impediment, but rather it is a source of power.
There you go.
So when you get to the point, you can say, look, I was a liar and a thief. I am not today, but I was.
Right.
The outcome of that put my happy butt in prison, which was less than fun, but an incredible learning environment
yeah.
that has now led me to the point where I can openly say that and speak that I am not now a prisoner of my past.
Sure.
Now, this is funny to me. It really is. But I am a convicted felon by legal definition in this human life. Okay? That means, interestingly enough, I cannot own a gun. Oh boy, I tell you,
that's good to know, Chuck. You would be a menace to society.
Oh yeah, menace to society. I mean, you know, I am so I feel so you know, really just taken back by the fact I can't own a gun. The funny part is, I can be the president of the United States. There is nothing that says that the president of the United States cannot be a convicted felon.
What?
So I could be, not that I ever will, but I could be the president of the United States. I could be the commander in chief. I could be the person that says, pull the flipping trigger.
Right.
But I can't own the gun.
Oh, how
now,
funny. What a great ironic story.
I mean, you know, it's bizarre.
That is.
But I am not. Some people will hide behind their past. They will hide behind their choices. You know you did something wrong, but you don't admit it. You don't want people to know it. Oh, my gosh, if they knew that, what will they in the South, what would they think of me? I can't believe it. I'm just not going to tell anybody. Well, if you go down that road and you keep it hidden and you never acknowledge what it really is, you are not empowered.
Not even close.
Yep. Well,
the secret is the power.
Got a
go ahead, Dennis.
For you, then. It's a question that I ask a lot of people sometimes when we get into it. But, it's a question on whether or not you would like to be respected or would you rather be liked?
I have to pause on that. You go.
I'm going to tell you my first response, and sometimes that is the dumbest thing I've ever done. I often tell people that I think out loud, and boy, has that gotten me in trouble before. But... I'm honestly to you, I'm not sure that I'm hung up on either, but if it was a choice and I had to choose one or the other, the first thing that I feel is that respect probably serves my ego more than being liked.
Hmm.
But I don't know that I'm hung up on either one of them. And this is a really blunt thing to say, and it really irritates some people, but I don't care whether someone likes me or not.
That's
it really means nothing to me.
Me
the
too.
Way I look at it is I have, for whatever purpose I am here for in human form, I have had some life-changing experiences for me that I am willing to share with others. And if other people can hear it, like I use the kids, you know, if the older brother can say to the younger sister, don't put your hand on the stove, you'll burn yourself. Now, I'm going to pick on Goldie. If Goldie were my sister, she'd probably obstinate and stubborn enough, she'd stick her hand up there anyway, just to make sure that I wasn't lying to her.
No, and I clearly will tell people, I learn by experience. So you can tell me everything you want, but I'm one that needs to, if I have the experience, then it is the greatest teacher. So I'm not afraid to, but I also tell people, pain, heartache, all the stuff that most people run to for the hills, I'm not afraid of those experiences. I understand that I'm going to dive into those experiences because experience will be my teacher.
Right.
So at least I'm clear that, listen, give me all your advice, and this is mostly about people. You don't want to mess with him. He's this, that, and the other thing. You don't want, oh, he did this, this, and this. Okay, you know what? I'm going to experience him with me. He may not do those things. If he does those things, I will experience them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I because lots of people I know from working with the kids. Dennis, I'm gonna put you back on hold because I want to get Dorothy Lee from the chat room. She's got a question. I want to get that in as well.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming on the air, though. I really appreciate it.
Talk to you later, Dennis.
All right, man.
So what I've learned from nannying is I see children behave one way with me and one way with their parents. And it has taught me that different energies create different responses in people.
Sure.
So where somebody might be a liar and a cheat with this woman, being around me, maybe they won't be a liar and a cheat because maybe you don't have to lie. If you want to be with other women, I'm cool with that. So now immediately the whole dynamic of the relationship is not you must be with me and me alone or this is not going to work. I'm like, hey, I'm a pretty open kind of gal. Let's talk about this, you know. And I'm not saying bringing a third into the bedroom or something, but meaning, listen, when you're not with me, if you want to be with her, maybe I prefer not to hear about it. So now you don't have to lie. Now you have the freedom because the whole dynamic of the relationship with me is different than the one it was with the person saying, don't go out with him, he's a liar and he's a cheat. You know, that doesn't apply to me. So
when you know who you are and you can be open about who you are, then you are empowered. And I agree with you, Goldie. I in one sense of the word, I wish that I could say, oh, I can read a book and learn. Old Chuck has to experience. and I tend to think, as humans, probably a lot of us are like that. But I will say this, and I think it's true with your radio show. I think it is true with my book. And that is, I believe that it while someone may not learn the lesson, what they can be exposed to is at least a thought-opening idea.
I agree.
And the people that have read the book have said, you know, it offers me hope to see, and I don't say this egotistically, so I'm really careful so that the people in the chat room or who are listening don't get caught up in Chuck ego. Look, I've had success following prison. That's wonderful. But success to me really is the impact on other people's lives. But the reality of it is, in human form, success also manifests in I'm not living destitute on the streets.
You're making a nice living financially. I think it's actually kind of important because you're a felon, because, you know, so many quote unquote felons believe that they'll never work. They can't make a living. I mean, you can see them put themselves into a box and then say, why can't I get a job? Well, look what you believe.
Right.
Because I can prove to you, I know a felon who basically, you know, I don't know what you make a year, but I could tell just by when we met, you're not destitute.
No, and the thing about it is, and this really does play with item number 7 of the 23 steps, and to some extent number 8. Both of them have a similar flavor in that I have, by choice, been very open about my past.
That's a big part of it. Yes.
Yeah, when people come up and I have this happen fairly, you know, regularly, they come up and it's like, well, you know, how do I get a job? I've been a convicted felon. I said, you go to the interview, you set rapport for the first 5 minutes, you know, because typically if you're not going to get hired if they don't like you in 5 minutes anyway. I mean,
that's
just
true.
A reality check.
Yeah.
So you set rapport in the first 5 minutes, and then you look them in the eye and say, now, before we proceed with the interview, there's something that I need to tell you.
Yeah.
Because it may change the course of the interview, and I respect you enough and care enough about you that I will not waste your time. I have been convicted of a felony.
Right.
And I have told people that. And I have been turned down from jobs because of that.
Not all,
but I have been turned down from jobs because
okay.
of it. And you know what? That's their problem. It isn't mine.
Oh,
I can't help
you,
that
Jim.
They don't have enough sense to recognize the talent that I would have brought to their company.
Exactly.
But if they are limited by beliefs that a felony conviction that occurred in the 80s and that I paid the price for in the 90s, in 2009 still is relevant, that is not my problem. It means I need to go to the next opportunity and
that you're creating.
Right. But no one is ever going to say to me, well, you know, He hid the truth from us.
Right.
Because relationships that we have in physical form are in large part based upon the ability to trust and believe that what someone says is true.
Okay. I want to go into Dorothy's question.
Sure.
She writes, say I am hoping for a certain outcome, so I make decisions for this outcome to unfold, like invest, but something happens and the investment crashes. Would I not become a victim or, and then she wrote dot, dot, dot.
Okay. I love the dot, dot, dot. Thank you, Dorothy, for your dot, dot, dot. I'm a dot, dot, dot kind of writer, and it drives my wife crazy.
That's funny. I'm a dot, dot, dotter, too.
If we're putting the dot, dot, dots or dashes, I love those. You know, I just don't like commas. It's so plain. That doesn't have jack to do with Dorothy's question. Okay, so let me address Dorothy's question in kind of a weird way. All right? Let's take current event. All right. Now, it's fairly obvious that back in December, we're talking now less than 6 months ago, or a little, I take that back, a little more than 6 months ago, since we're now in July, one of the icons of Wall Street, a guy by the name Obscure, that you and I would probably never have heard of, I can promise you I didn't until December like the 8th or 9th, but this guy by the name of Bernie Madoff comes along and says, well, really my investment thing was nothing but a big Ponzi scheme. Okay?
Okay.
And then it's released that purportedly he has defrauded his, quote, investors of about $65 billion. And for that, on the 29th of June, now we're talking, let me think of this, is 6 months and 20 days later, which is incredibly speedy,
right.
He is sentenced to 150 years in prison, and the man is 72 years old. So, needless to say, he will die in prison.
Right.
Now, I have sat there and I've watched this thing unfold for 6 months because he set the standard. Charles Ponzi created the scheme. That's where the name comes from. But
okay.
Bernie Madoff with all the money. Sorry, but, you know, with a guy by the name of Madoff, you know, it's like, you know, was it like one of those, I came into this life and I want my name to be named, I want to be named Madoff so I can set history. But the people
and listen,
who,
you're talking to Golden Hawk, for goodness sake.
Okay. Anyway, but the people who lost their money are claiming victims. Victim, I'm a victim, I'm a victim. Really? Now, let me ask this question, and this is the hard question and the one that the victim doesn't want to have asked. You invested your money. Were you prudent with that investment? What choices did you make that would cause you to put your money where you did? Were you complicit with this? Could you have made different choices? Did you choose, for example, and I'm picking on Madoff, but I'm going to carry it out slightly differently in a minute, but why did you choose with Madoff? Oh, well, he got consistently higher returns than anybody else.
Right.
Oh, really? Well, doesn't that give you an indication that maybe there is
something wrong? So true.
Okay, and isn't it fascinating that Chuck or Goldie or the average person likely would never have invested with him, they didn't know him, that the only people that generally got really close to Bernie Madoff happened to be people that were in his inner circle that trusted him.
Mm.
Now, he violated their trust, but Elie Wiesel, who is the famous Jewish guy from the Holocaust who, I mean, he's of national fame, purportedly had all his investments with Bernie Madoff. And then he's crying afterwards. It's like he's, you know, he's broken trust and he's messed with the Jewish people, et cetera.
Right.
And this is not a religious issue, by the way.
I agree.
But he's like, the government's bailed everybody else out. They should bail us out. It's not right. And it's
okay,
excuse me. Dude, let me ask you a question. You are an intelligent person. I think he has a doctorate. So the question is, a chicken farmer in the South understands you don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
So why would you have put all your money with Bernie Madoff?
Well, I think it was, ultimately, it was greed.
It was greed, and there was a choice to put all the money there because greedily I was going to get a better result than the average person.
Right.
Now, but what if you're the average person? What if you're the average person? What if you took your money and you put it in the stock market, you've got your 401k at work or whatever it happens to be, or you've saved money and you've tried to do the right thing and you put it in the stock market and the stock market collapsed, which it did.
Right.
Aren't I a victim? Of what? Of the fact that everything rises and falls? I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. The ocean, the tide comes in and the tide goes out. Now, I'm 52. I have seen the stock market crash, and I have seen the stock market rise. There are bear markets, and there are bull markets. We breathe out, and we breathe in. So to say I invested my money, and accidentally, instead of my lungs filling and breathing in and expanding, I happened to catch it on the out-breath, and all of a sudden the money is gone, it is only a material possession. The question is, what did you learn from it? What choices did you make,
right,
and what did you learn from the choices that you made? Not focus on, and this is where the victim is, I'm focusing, I'm not saying this about the person that wrote this, by the way, so I want to make be clear, but many people would say, I put my money and I lost my money, oh, wow, poor is me, look what's happened, and it's the big banker's fault, and it's the people who created these mortgages' fault. It's everybody's fault except their own. And the question is, what did you learn from what took place? What did you learn?
Right.
That's where you move past victim to victor.
Right. Well, it is interesting that, you know, most people in America, anyways, their biggest money makers are essentially gambling. The stock market is all, it's a form of gambling.
I mean, the funny part about the stock market to me, and I don't have anything against it. I have invested in the stock market. Sometimes I win, sometimes I lose. But here's a fascinating thing, just on a spiritual level. What is the fundamental thing about the stock market that you expect? I buy low and sell high. That's what you want to have happen.
Right.
But if you do that, doesn't that mean that there is a converse? That someone, if I buy low and I sell high, that means the person that buys when I sell, conversely, has to lose.
Right.
It's
the balance of the universe.
It's the balance. So
some days you're going to be the high, and some days you're
some days you're going to be the low. And the question is, what do you learn from the experiences and the choices that you make? But don't sit back and say, well, I should always win. For every winner, there is a loser. That is just the law of nature.
I agree. Sorry, I'm chatting in the chat room to somebody.
That is not a problem at all.
Okay. We are actually up to this. We're going to be off the air in 3 minutes. Dream Master, I would get back to you. I only got 2 hours. They don't allow me 3 hours. If it was up to me, I'd be on 40 hours a week. No, Dream Master, come back next week. We're going to have another great show next week. Chuck, I am going to be safe to say that we got to 7, and that I think next time
that's
you
correct.
Come on, we should come on from, we'll maybe start at 7 and keep going and make this not something ever that has to get done, in any specific amount of time. You're a great guest. Your stories are wonderful. You have up-to-date stuff. And, gosh, you make me look like a bloomin' queen.
Oh, you are.
I'm only joking, love.
Well, the one thing, Goldie, is, and I think there is a lot of power to what you're bringing. I know there's not much time left, but the nice part about it is we can chat outside of the scope of the show. I'll be delighted to come back on. We can pick it up at 7 or 8 and move wherever we need to. And in the meantime, if people do have questions, if they want to email me, it's chuck@chuckgallagher.com. I'm certainly open to that. I have no problem with that, because the one thing I believe is the responsibility to pay it forward. And
uh-huh.
I have been given a lot of people have helped me in my life, and I cannot repay them financially, but I certainly can repay it in a different way by trying to, if nothing else, support other people on their journey, because there have been many that have supported me.
Chuck, you're a fabulous human being. You're a fabulous soul. You're a great guest. No matter how you slice it, you're welcome here. And everybody in the chat room is definitely going, bring them back. We want to hear the rest of the steps. So they're loving you. Trish put all your information up, Chuck, at chuckgallagher.com, your website, where to get your book, all of it. You're amazing. I always enjoy playing with you, always, always, always. And
I enjoy being played with, so that's quite fine.
You know, isn't that the law of attraction there, Chuck? So definitely we will have them on again. Check the upcoming episodes. In fact, Chuck, I'm going to call you when the show goes off, and we'll reschedule it.
All right, that sounds good. Y'all take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody in the chat room. I love you guys, and I love your energy when you guys tune in. You guys rock. And next week, Saskia Rowell. Oh, she's going to be an amazing guest. First time guest, but she has quite the story. I read the book. All right, everybody, have an amazing week and a happy 4th of July. I'll talk to everybody next week. Bye.